Blindness isn't a handicap, it's a nuisance. By Deborah Skoblionkov. Copyright 1989, The New York Times. This article, which appeared in the True Life Stories section of the October 1989 McCall's magazine, focused on the Maurer family. The reporter and photographer spent considerable time at the National Center for the Blind and with President and Mrs. Maurer in their home. The article has generated a great deal of positive comment around the country. We have received permission to reprint it. Here it is. Mornings are hectic times at the home of Patricia and Mark Maurer, both 38. As soon as the breakfast dishes are cleared, they hurriedly prepare their 5-year-old son, David Patrick, for preschool, dress their 2-year-old daughter, Diana Marie, and drop her off at a babysitter's house down the street, then rush off to work. Mark, in addition to practicing law, has since 1986 headed a 50,000-member organization with an annual operating budget of $6 million. Patricia, a former schoolteacher, works by his side as coordinator of public information and community relations. The Maurers work hard to ensure a comfortable life for themselves and their children. Indeed, their home, a 3-story red brick row house in a pleasant and close-knit Baltimore neighborhood, is warm and inviting. Portraits of the children are proudly hung above the fireplace mantel in the living room, and good dishes and wine glasses are displayed in the dining room china closet. In the evenings, Mark's favorite relaxation is barbecuing on his backyard grill. Their lives might appear to be a baby boomer's ideal, were it not for one thing. Mark and Patricia are blind. As infants, both suffered from retinopathy, or detachment of the retina, to this day one of the leading causes of blindness among babies born prematurely. It is brought on by the high concentration of oxygen in incubators and is not hereditary. Both of the Maurer's children have normal eyesight. The organization they run is the National Federation of the Blind, based in Baltimore. The Federation advocates the complete integration of the blind with the rest of society and makes education and job opportunities for blind people a top priority. With 70% unemployment among working-age blind people, a lot of talent and lives are being wasted, say Patricia and Mark. In his capacity as director of the Federation and in his private legal practice, Mark lectures widely on issues affecting the blind and has initiated a number of legal proceedings to combat discrimination. But mostly, Patricia and Mark want to inspire other blind people to accept their blindness as a physical nuisance or characteristic rather than a handicap. Together, Patricia and I are exploring the possibilities of what blind people can do, Mark explains. But we're not different from other blind people. We might have had different experiences, greater opportunities in training, but we all have the same hopes, drives, and fears. They weren't always so confident of their capabilities. Both were born in Iowa to parents of strong Midwestern stock, who instilled in their children the value of education and the will to persist. Patricia Schaff grew up in the small town of Dexter, Iowa, population 400. As a child, she had a little residual vision perception and could get by as long as she wore thick glasses. But as Patricia approached her teens, her eyesight rapidly deteriorated to the point where she could not read the print in her schoolbooks, even using a magnifying glass. She was the only blind person in town, and as a consequence, there were no special programs to help her. The closest school for the blind was 300 miles away, and her parents did not want to send her so far from home. So she attended public schools and struggled to keep up with the other students. Her parents would read her homework assignments to her each evening. "But I couldn't get around very well and relied on friends to help me when we went out," she says, remembering the embarrassments of her adolescence. "I was extremely self-conscious." Mark Maurer was born in Des Moines, Iowa, a capital city. He recalls that he was 5 years old before he realized he was blind. "I could see some colors, some light, and some objects, but everything disappeared beyond 10 feet," he says. "As a child, I assumed that everyone saw the world like that." Then one day, he was shattered to discover that his brother could see way down to the end of the block. The next year, Mark was enrolled in an elementary school for the blind. His mother studied Braille so she could assist him, and she began to transcribe books into Braille for the library. It wasn't long before the reserved boy became a voracious reader. His parents bought a stereo, so Mark could also listen to the growing number of books on records. He attended a parochial high school for sighted students, and every evening his mother would read his homework assignments to him, quizzing him afterward to make certain he understood. "My mother was wonderful," Mark says. "She always insisted that I do things." Nevertheless, he was, he remembers, a loner who enjoyed solitary pleasures, particularly escaping into the exciting books he ordered from the library of the Iowa Commission for the Blind, an organization in which he was becoming increasingly active. Meanwhile, back in Dexter, Patricia attended a church meeting featuring a speaker from the Iowa Commission for the Blind. "It was a big event in a small town," she recalls. "And it was there that I learned of the availability of books on records and tape. I knew they would be a big help to me." The next year, during her junior year of high school, Patricia heard a televised public service message from the Iowa Commission for the Blind. She wrote to them for information, and 2 weeks later received a telephone call from the commission's director, a blind man named Dr. Kenneth Jernigan. He told her about a summer training program for the blind in Des Moines. After discussing it with her parents, Patricia decided to attend. At the program that summer, she learned how to read Braille and travel independently with a cane. Most important, Patricia says, she learned that it was okay to be blind. And it was there that she met Mark Maurer. "I first met Patricia on June 16, 1969, at 4:30 in the afternoon," says Mark, with characteristic precision. They were introduced in a philosophy class taught by Dr. Jernigan. Mark and Patricia became friends and frequently stayed up in the dorm lounge talking, or more often, arguing late into the night. He was intrigued by this engaging and very attractive young woman who spoke her mind freely and often disagreed with his opinions. She, on the other hand, thought he was cold, arrogant, and kind of conceited. They agreed on one thing. Both had a deep respect for Dr. Jernigan, a man who inspired thousands of people while directing the Iowa Commission for the Blind and during his concurrent 18-year reign as president of the National Federation of the Blind. "He became our mentor," Patricia says. One early encounter with Dr. Jernigan made a particularly strong impression on Mark. "Not long after we'd met, he invited me over for a barbecue," Mark recalls. "Well, I went, and he put the charcoal in the grill and lit it. That's not so astonishing. But then he handed me a welding glove and said, 'Now I want you to stick your hand in the fire.' To a blind person, touching something hot is terrifying. Blind people are particularly afraid of fire. I said, 'No, you're crazy.' But he persisted, and finally I discovered that with welding gloves, you can safely put your hand in the middle of a fire." That incident proved to be a turning point in Mark's life. By confronting and overcoming his greatest fears, he opened the doors to new perceptions and possibilities. Dr. Jernigan encouraged Mark and Patricia to pursue higher education. In 1969, Patricia entered Drake University, in Mark's hometown of Des Moines. The next year, Mark enrolled at Notre Dame University in Indiana. Occasionally, their paths crossed, but nothing romantic developed until one evening during her junior year of college, when Patricia impulsively decided to call her old friend at Notre Dame. She was shocked to realize how much she'd grown to care for him. That phone conversation sparked a correspondence between them that ultimately evolved into love. "It was a romance of letters and telephone calls," is how Patricia sums up their year-and-a-half courtship. Finally reunited at a National Federation of the Blind convention in New York, Mark decided he'd had enough of this long-distance relationship. 2 minutes later, he announced, rather than proposed, that they would marry. "Oh," responded the stunned Patricia, "when?" "As soon as it can be arranged." They were married 6 weeks later in Des Moines, and soon afterward settled into a small student apartment in South Bend, Indiana, near Notre Dame. "They were lean times," says Mark of the first years of their marriage. "It was definitely a struggle," Patricia recalls, "but I never doubted that we'd made the right decision." Upon receiving her degree in education, Patricia was offered a teaching position in a regular public elementary school back in Iowa. When she applied for a teaching job in Indiana, however, she was rejected because of her blindness. Not once to take this kind of discrimination lightly, she and Mark threatened the local school district, sending letters to congressmen, local newspapers, and television stations. As a result, the district reluctantly employed her as a substitute teacher. After a year, the school board, impressed by her performance, offered her a regular contract. But that year, 1974, Mark graduated cum laude from Notre Dame, and the Mowers moved from South Bend to Indianapolis so Mark could attend Indiana University Law School. There, Patricia supported them by working as a data processor. Finally, in 1978, armed with his law degree, Mark landed a job with the Civil Aeronautics Board in Washington, D.C., and the family moved to their present home in Maryland. It was a comfortable and responsible position, Mark agrees, but he had even greater ambitions. After 2 years, he left to start his own law firm, specializing in civil litigation. In 1982, he ran for a seat in the Maryland House of Delegates, but lost. During Mark's hectic campaign for the state legislature, Patricia was right by his side. Their marriage, says Mark, is a team effort. Then, after 9 years of marriage and with their future looking bright and secure, Patricia and Mark felt that the time had come to start a family. Patricia admits that most of her initial concerns about motherhood were normal fears any woman might have. I was scared and didn't feel that I was ready for the responsibility of children, she recalls. Later on, though still scared, she felt prepared for the challenges. What worried Patricia most was how she would teach her children to recognize colors. Ultimately, she enlisted the aid of sighted friends and family members, and now David Patrick has become so color-conscious that dressing him has become a problem. He refuses to wear clothes that don't match properly. We've probably overcompensated, Patricia admits. The only time I really felt bad about being blind, she confesses, was when David Patrick was learning to use crayons, and he used to plead with me to color with him. She has learned to accept David Patrick's disappointment philosophically. He has plenty of friends to play with, she says. Patricia knows there will be other problems the children will have to accept. Recently, David Patrick became enthralled with motorcycles, and he wishes his dad could give him a ride on one. And eventually, David Patrick will have to understand that he and his father will never be able to toss a ball in the backyard together. But perhaps the most potentially disturbing dilemma the Mowers children will encounter is how to reconcile their parents' view of being blind with society's perception of the blind as handicapped and helpless. Patricia understands that to a child it must be confusing. David Patrick sees us at home handling situations without any difficulty, but when we go out, he sees other people treating us as though we aren't capable human beings, she says. Of course, their being blind does sometimes create special problems when it comes to the smooth running of their household, but so far no problem has been so big that Patricia and Mark couldn't find a solution. Without the aid of sight or a housekeeper, Patricia maintains order by keeping herself conscious of where I put things, and where the kids are, and where they put things. But, she adds cheerfully, the kids will usually let you know where they are. To be absolutely sure they always know what's going on, Patricia and Mark have installed an intercom system that connects every room in their home. And when unforeseeable problems arise, Patricia usually finds they can be solved with a little common sense. Once, when both children became sick at the same time and were prescribed different medicines in similarly shaped bottles, she asked the pharmacist to put extra tape on one bottle so she could distinguish it from the other. For other, more practical matters, the Mowers' neighbors have been more than happy to lend a hand. One woman who lives down the street is also employed by the National Federation of the Blind and gives Patricia and Mark a ride to and from work. And as a matter of course, neighborhood friends stop by the Mowers' home on their way to the supermarket to see if they need any groceries or just to chat. In many ways, parenthood has reinforced the Mowers' belief that they aren't so different from sighted people. Patricia explains that, I used to think I couldn't find things because I'm blind, but after talking with other mothers, I've come to the conclusion that everybody loses socks and misplaces bottles. It was a great realization. Mark found that becoming a father had a tremendous impact on his life, but in ways he hadn't expected. I was misled about the whole thing, he says with humor. Sure, I'd always thought it would be a good thing to have children, but I figured that the principal part of parenting would be responsibility. Nobody ever told me about the great and wonderful joy involved. Until I experienced it, I didn't know it existed. At bedtime, either Patricia or Mark reads the kids to sleep from children's books transcribed into Braille. Like many parents, they're looking forward, albeit fearfully, to the time when their children enter the tumultuous teenage years. They consider drugs the greatest threat to their children's welfare, and hope and pray that they will have instilled in David Patrick and Diana Marie the strength and self-discipline to resist destructive influences. Some people might worry about blind parents having children, says Patricia. But for the serious problems that may come before us, blindness has very little to do with how we will handle them. Dinner at the Mowers is as chaotic as in any normal household with a young child and an infant. But it is also a joyful affair, partly because of the antics of the irrepressible David Patrick, who is just learning to help out and alternately revels in and rebels against his new responsibilities. This day, the Mowers are preparing a feast. Early in the morning, Patricia and David Patrick baked chocolate chip cookies. A neighbor stopped by on her way to the supermarket to pick up a shopping list. By noon, Mark had spread his porterhouse steaks on a tray to marinate, and had poured a pile of hickory chips into a bucket to soak. Mark loves to grill steaks during any season, and the Mowers barbecues have become famous in their neighborhood. Once, Mark got the urge to barbecue in the middle of a winter snowstorm, and his neighbors called the fire department. They couldn't figure out where the smoke was coming from, Patricia explains with a laugh. Now, with the sun setting and David Patrick watching proudly, Mark fills the kettle grill with charcoal, douses it with lighter fluid, and carefully ignites it with a spark gun. He hugs David Patrick close to him, safely out of range of the fire, and waits for the flames to die down before adding the hickory chips. Inside, Patricia prepares sautéed mushrooms, zucchini, French fried potatoes, and fruit salad, while Diana Marie plays contentedly in her nearby playpen. Mark gauges the cooking time of the steaks with a talking timer, a device that fits neatly into his shirt pocket and electronically tells the elapsed minutes and seconds through a computer-generated voice. Wearing thick welding gloves, he casually turns the metal grid that holds the thick steaks. In a few minutes, they're cooked to perfection. The Mowers easily move around their home without the white retractable canes they both use outside. Bumping into each other occasionally is inevitable, however, especially when gathering around the dinner table, but it's often an excuse for an affectionate hug or pat. When Patricia leans over to feed Diana Marie in her high chair, she feels with one hand for her daughter's mouth and directs the spoon with the other. Mark refers to Diana Marie as Little Red for her shock of flaming red hair, which he has never seen. David Patrick, who looks out for his younger sister, is called Little Man by his father. When David Patrick wants to taste his mother's steak, she offers a speared morsel in his direction. He pauses before taking a bite. "I love you, Mom," he shyly offers. Mark beams with pride. "We're doing things that 25 years ago were thought beyond the capabilities of blind people. Of course, there are natural boundaries for us, but unless they're tested, how do we know? Inevitably, there are going to be failures, but unless you try, there's no opportunity for growth. Besides," he adds, "it's such an adventure."